The Sunday Grill with Orla Rapple on Beat 102 103.
First guest this morning has had a busy week. Bernie Woods is a Kilkenny teacher and a creative mindfulness practitioner. She's released a collection of three books tailored to children, preteens, and teenagers. You've reached in every age group, and it aims to help young people explore challenging emotions and difficult to navigate situations. Bernie, aka the Meaningful Moon Tour, joins me this morning with more details on her meaningful, mindful poetry. You're very welcome, Bernie.
Oh, thank you so much, Orla, for having me on this morning.
Thanks for coming into studio. I have to say, poetry gets a bit of a bad rap, doesn't it? It can be seen as quite highbrow, and it really isn't. It can be really soothing and helpful in people's lives, can't it?
And it can give us moments of calm, moments of understanding, and moments of clarity. And throughout my life, poetry has just been such an amazing coping mechanism for me. And my poetry goes back to my own primary school days of actually writing the limericks.
Oh, and yes.
I remember the joy I felt writing that poem when I was in third or fourth class. And throughout my life, in times of great happiness, in times of sadness and everything in between, poetry helped me. Writing poetry, reading poetry. And then when I got this opportunity to publish my collection of poetry, it was just a dream come true.
That's so lovely to hear. And I totally understand what you mean by the limericks. I have such a core memory of being taught how limericks work and being really astounded by it, that I, as an 8-year-old, could make up a limerick. But I think then what happened to me is the Leaving Cert happened and I had to pull apart Stony Grey Soil and different poems. And it came, that's when that kind of highbrowness and trying to, you know, decide what a poem means. And you don't always need a meaning, do you?
Well, in the poems that I do, we read them and we discuss them. But sometimes we just use it as a mindful practice.
Mm.
And we just read the poem together, tuning in.
Mm.
And all the in my collection, the different poems, each poem has a particular theme or a message. Some of the poetry is bringing our awareness back to the present moment. And then others are a stimulus for our discussion.
OK, great. You have broken it up, as we said, into three age groups. Is it for very different reasons those age groups would need poetry?
Well, I find all the children of all age groups respond really well to the poetry. And the way I've broken up is 5 to 8 year olds, 8 to 11 year olds,
mm-hmm.
and 11 to 14 year olds.
Okay.
The 11 to 14 year old poetry is more for teenagers, and they are actually based on real life scenarios,
okay.
and real life different things that teenagers might face, different challenges teenagers might face, and it's more a stimulus for discussion.
Okay.
And it's that common humanity piece as well, that they don't feel as if they're on their own.
And you're somebody writing else, all these poems
I'm
yourself.
Writing all these poems.
Okay, so how many poems are in the three books?
There are about 36 to 40 altogether.
Wow. And how long did that take you to put together?
Over, because I use these in the mindfulness classes that I deliver. I deliver mindfulness classes based on the creative mindfulness approach all around the Southeast. And I have been using these in the classes and I didn't realise how many I actually had until I put them all together. And I say over a couple of years I've been writing them.
And is there a certain time of the day you get your inspiration, or does
something
happen?
Oh, it could happen at any time.
At any time.
Any time.
And could be a case that something inspires you.
Yes.
Okay.
And I always bring a notebook in my bag. I have written things on the back of a seat. So I've written them, all different things. And sometimes when I sit down and say I'm going to write a poem, it mightn't come at that moment
of course.
In time.
Yeah.
So it's great, just different inspiration. And the mindfulness classes that I give are great inspiration as well.
So you're on career break at the moment and you're travelling around to different schools giving these mindfulness workshops to
yes.
students. And you're asking them to, in some cases, to talk about the poem. And
yes.
and how do they react to that?
Oh, they react so well to it and they're so open to it. And I think the fact that I have written them myself, when I'm reading it and when I say that I've written it themselves, they really kind of buy into it as well. Because I'm speaking from experience with book one and book two. These are different coping mechanisms mm-hmm. and different techniques that I would use and that I teach to children as well. So my background is I'm a primary school teacher.
Mm-hmm.
I've been teaching for 18 years and I've always had such a huge interest in giving children the coping mechanisms and the skills to help them throughout their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And I started practicing mindfulness myself about 10 years ago. And at the start, I noticed little subtle changes. But now when I take a step back and look, I have seen so many positive influences and an positive impact because of practicing mindfulness.
Okay. And do you practice that daily?
I practice it daily.
Okay. Do you take time out of your day
I take
to do that?
So I would do it in the morning, and then sometimes I do it in the evening as well. But there's two kind of parts to mindfulness. There's the informal practice and the formal practice. So a formal practice would be something like a meditation, mm-hmm. but an informal practice is kind of bringing into mindfulness into everything else. Studies show that 47% of the time our minds are somewhere else.
Yeah.
And
I'm surprised that's only 47%.
That is really interesting. Now, that's a few years old, but that's really interesting because when I go into schools, I actually ask the children, how much percent of the time do you think? And they actually guess higher.
Yeah.
They would say 60, 70.
Yeah.
So maybe it shows the time
mm-hmm.
as well.
Mm-hmm. And I say the owl phones haven't helped no, either when it comes exactly. to mindfulness too. Will you read one of your poems?
Oh,
for
I'd love
us,
to.
We'd love to hear it. So what age group is this for?
This is for the 11 to 14 year olds because okay. I notice with mindfulness is paying attention to the present moment on purpose without judgment. But a huge part of mindfulness would be self-compassion piece. So being a friend to ourselves. So I would find fifth, sixth class teenagers, sometimes they might struggle with that a little mm-hmm. bit. And I've written a poem called Speaking to a Friend.
Okay, take it away.
If I was speaking to a friend, I know what I would say. Be kind to yourself and take it day by day. However, sometimes when we speak to ourselves, we are not that kind, and that doesn't help us feel better in our heart and in our mind. So next time you hear that inner voice giving out to you, speak to yourself as you would a friend and know that you deserve the kindness too.
That's gorgeous. And that would really resonate with someone who isn't in the 11 to 14 year old age group. That means a lot to all of us,
yeah,
doesn't it?
So many people are saying that because we had put the ages on as a guideline.
Mm-hmm.
But I was in a school yesterday and they said that the older children, 10, 11, 12, are using book one mm-hmm. and they're responding really well to that. And I know some adults that are actually using book one and book two and book three for themselves.
Mm-hmm, of course.
So you kind of take from it what you need yourself. And there's a poem there for all different things. And there's one actually about social media as well and the likes and different things
mm-hmm.
and maybe how you feel when you don't get the likes or when you don't get the interaction.
Tell us what you said mindfulness is again.
Mindfulness is the awareness of this present moment. So paying attention to this present moment on purpose, non-judgmentally.
Okay. And what does the non-judgmentally bit mean?
Without judging ourselves.
Ourselves.
Yeah, without judging ourselves.
Okay.
And I think sometimes we do judge ourselves. And I would find that when I'm introducing mindfulness to children and to teenagers, I ask them, oh, what do they think mindfulness is first? And then sometimes they find it difficult to answer that question, but I would say, how do you feel when you practice mindfulness?
Mm-hmm.
And they actually know how they feel.
Mm-hmm.
They know it's a calmness. They know they're in the moment.
Okay, interesting. And tell me, the three books, if people buy the three books, can they buy them separately for
they
the different age groups?
They can buy them separately
okay.
or they can buy them all together. So the publishers are Outside the Box, Learning Resources, and they can be bought online, but they're in the book centre in Waterford City as well.
Okay. And if people do buy the poetry, how would you like them to use them since you're not there to give a workshop?
That's an excellent question. There are so many different ways of using it. So you could read it. I know some parents that are reading book one in the night time before their child goes to bed.
Okay, so that's for the smaller children.
Yeah, for the smaller ones. And then they might pick a poem to read together as a family. Then with the older children, what people are doing is they're giving the book to the child or mm-hmm. the teenager and they're saying, oh, show me your favourite or which one do you like or which one does any of those match how you feel right now. And it's amazing what actually comes out of that.
Lovely. Well, it is called Meaningful Mindful Poetry. As you said, it's available at the Book Centre in Waterford City. But if you want to check out Outside the Box as well, you can buy it online there. Is that right?
Yes.
Good stuff. And have you an Instagram or anything, Bernie, if people want to follow you?
Oh, I am The Meaningful Moon Tour, and I share lots of ideas about mindfulness and incorporating little mini mindful moments into your day. And there's information about the classes that I run as well.
Lovely stuff. Do you think that, like, I'm a terror for not doing my mindfulness, and I wish I could do it more. I need to get it into my routine. But if I, like, say my daughter is 8 years of age, if she started now, do you think it's something that would carry on for her? Like, is that a good age to start?
Oh, definitely. I have introduced it to children as young as 4.
Okay.
And they have just been so open to it. It's as easy as just doing little breathing exercises. Sometimes what we would do in our lessons, we would just get something simple like a feather and just breathe in and then blow out on the feather. And what some children do is they use the sense of touch and they'd rub the feather on their palm, up and down, and just breathe in and out. And that itself is a calming mechanism and a calming tool.
Gorgeous stuff. Well, you are, as you said, The Meaningful Moon Tour, and you'll find Bernie on Instagram under that name. But the book is called Meaningful Mindful Poetry, available at the Book Centre in Waterford and Outside the Box. If you want to Google that, you can buy it online there. Bernie, best of luck with everything, and thank you so much for coming in this morning.
Thank you so much.
The Sunday Grill with Orla Rappel on Beat 102-103.
And around this time 10 years ago, my next guest was preparing to drive his tractor through the Carrick-on-Shore streets along with some of his tractor pals. 10 years on, and the Christmas Tractors of Carrick-on-Shore is an annual event, and it's so popular that many towns around the country have adopted this idea. In fact, you see it in so many places. I often think with small country towns, why aren't they doing it? Well, now Stuart and the team behind Christmas Tractors of Carrick-on-Shore are celebrating their 10th anniversary and their just about 11th tractor run, and they're doing it all a bit bigger and better this year. Stuart joins me on the phone this morning. And Stuart, I have you down as Stuart Lights Carrick, but that is not your surname, is it?
No.
That's what you're in my phone as for since 2014. Stuart Lights Carrick.
Fair enough. No, it's a Stuart Downey.
Stuart, I remember talking to you back in 2014 and thinking, this is such a brilliant idea. Why has no one else thought of this? But can you remember your moment where you thought, this is what we're going to do?
I remember getting a message off a friend of mine. She sent me a message on Facebook with a picture of a kind of a big American tractor with a few lights on it.
Mm.
And she said it would look better than the... She'd been to see the Coca-Cola truck, and they were kind of really disappointed with, do you know what you see on the telly compared to what you get to see in real life?
Okay.
And she sent me this picture on Facebook, and she goes, your tractor would look better lit up now than the Coca-Cola truck would.
Okay.
And sure, I took a mad notion then, and I text some of the lads around to have a few tractors and neighbours and all that, and so before you know it, there was 10 of us going down the main street in Carrick there, and the place was black.
And tell me, in the interest of agricultural journalism, of course, and not because I will know anything to do with the answer to this, what kind of tractor did you have 10 years ago?
I had a Case Maxim.
A Case Maxim?
I was actually only thinking of it today. I couldn't remember the number plate of it, and I just thought, geez, I'm getting old. Memory is gone.
And what tractor have you now?
I have a new Case Maxim.
Oh, you've stuck with that. That's your brand
of
choice.
Brand, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the other tractors that got involved, are they still doing it on this 11th tractor run?
So out of the original 10 that started, there is 4 of us.
Four of the original 10
still in.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how many tractors do you get these days every year?
So we started with 10 the first year, and it's kind of slowly but surely been climbing. But see, we used to have to restrict it because of where the run would finish up. We could only accommodate a certain amount of tractors. So last year we were up to, I think it was 55.
Wow. 55?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
How long does that take then to get through Carrick-on-Shore?
It doesn't take too long to get through Carrick. It's we travel around because of when COVID kicked in, obviously not everyone could come into town or leave their homes.
Mm-hmm.
So we decided we'd take the show on the road. And so we mapped out a route from, say, we passed through Pilltown Fidown, Portlaw, Clonay, Rackarmack and into Carrick.
Lovely.
And we took in as many of the housing estates and streets as we could in each location.
And are you still doing it like that?
Yeah, but we kind of don't go into the housing estates now because obviously when everyone has packed their cars up for the night and then you have a 12-foot wide tractor trying to negotiate his way around, doesn't work too well.
Doesn't work too well at all.
No.
Listen, we give people the dates because this gets really jammed as well. So just if you want to stick it into your diary, it is December 14th, isn't that right?
That's it, yeah.
Okay, and that's what day is that? Is that a Saturday?
I hope it's a Saturday anyway.
That's
yeah.
a Saturday. And the charity Christmas tractor run begins at 5 o'clock. But you're having an extra special celebration of the tractor run this year. There's loads of events happening in Carrick all day. They're calling it the Tractors and Tudors Christmas Festival for December the 14th. All day, for example, there's craft and food stalls and amusements, Santa's Grotto and lots more at Ormond Castle. Ormond Castle, the Castle Park and Kickham Street. And then there's craft markets in Ormond Castle. There's a free Tudor Christmas tour at Ormond Castle as well. You can get more details at Explore Carrick on Shore. Tell me though about the kids' Christmas tractor run, Stuart, that you're having at 5:40 on that same day.
Yeah, so we're bringing back pedal power again. So we probably had it maybe 5 or 6 years ago. And we held the pedal power runs for a couple of years. And then COVID kicked in, of course, and that finished the pedal power. But we're bringing it back now again this year because it's great
idea.
To see it. And it's a great way of tiring out your children, you know, that evening because
and is it a
they'd
case
be dead in the bed by 8.
Yeah, and do you have to register or anything or can you just turn up with your pedal power tractor?
No, there'll be a registration thing going online now soon where you just put in your name and the child's name and the age and away you go. Then you pedal for all your might.
We'll have to check that one out if anyone has a kid who loves their tractor. Tell me how many lights you put on your tractor for the tractor run every Christmas.
Being around 40,000, I suppose.
Wow. And like, how long does that take you to get on your tractor?
Days.
Really?
Yeah, sure. Look, every year you have to change it up every year. Or, you know, it just looks the same and it gets a bit boring. So you'd be always trying new lighting systems. And then sure, sometimes, you know, you'll hit a puddle and you'll lose the string of lights off your wheels or off your mud guard. I mean, the amount of light bulbs between here now and the whole route that we've done must be in the millions at this stage.
And do you, so like on the days running up, are you working away with your tractor while it's getting Christmas lights on it?
Oh, geez, yeah. Like last year, the tractor was working up to, I think it was about 6 o'clock that morning. Okay. And it was an emergency wash then, like, and all hands on deck.
Okay. And then do you take the lights off straight away or do you keep them on for a few days?
Oh, geez, no, to be off, that's Sunday's job, to get them off.
Over and done with,
yeah. We put the lights back on the Christmas tree then, you see.
Okay, and do you try and hold on to those lights for every year for the tractor?
Should we try and hold on to them? But, I mean, they don't always survive either, you know.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Sometimes it's a bit tedious taking them off and sometimes you just tend to rip them off, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. if you're in a panic to get the tractor back out working again. Yeah.
Well, do you see this? Do you see yourself doing this for another decade now, Stuart, since you're a decade into it? Do you see yourself doing this for as long as possible?
I'd say if I tried to stop now, I'd be shot. So it's kind of a thing I have to keep it going.
Have you become known as the Christmas tractor lights man?
Only on your phone, no, Ireland. That's all.
true. That is true. Well, listen, let's give people that date again. It is December the 14th in Carrick-on-Shore. It has become an iconic evening for Christmas time in County Tipperary at this stage. It's the charity Christmas tractor run. It begins at 5 p.m. At the Hinterland Route. What is that there, Stuart, for people who don't know what that is?
So that's the hinterland route, to say we take in all the external villages surrounding Carrick before we land into Carrick.
You're returning, the Christmas tractors return to Carrick-on-Shore and there'll be a street party, the Beat Fleet will be there and that's between 7 and 8 on Kickham Street in Carrick-on-Shore. Stuart, I love that you're still doing this. I love your dedication to this.
Nah, sure, you have to be mad to do it a bit, don't you?
How many tractors do you think you'll have this year? The 55 again?
Nah, we might have a few more.
Let's hope so, because it's a full 10 years. I know it's your 11th time doing it, but 2014 was when this all started. So for 2024, let's hope you hit the nearly 100 tractors. That is the carrot. Oh, do you not want that?
I don't. Yeah, God, I don't. One tractor is a headache, never mind 100 of them.
See, I haven't got experience of this. I'm going to have to come down and see this iconic moment in Carrick on Shore. That is...
You come down, Arda, and I'll give you a lift.
I'd be so happy, Stuart. That would make my day to be on the back of a tractor with Christmas lights on it. You have a cab and everything, do you? Have you somewhere for me to sit in it?
Oh, yeah, proper passenger seat there
now. Okay, good stuff. I'm glad to hear that. Well, that is... it starts in all around the areas of Carrick on Shore, as you said, at 5 o'clock, and then it's back into the town between 7 and 8 o'clock, and there's a Beat Fleet presenters party there as well at Kickham Street. You can get more details if you want to check out your Facebook page for the Christmas lights. What's that Facebook page, Stuart?
The Christmas Tractors of Carrick on Shore.
Christmas Tractors of Carrick on Shore. And you can also check out social media. It's Explore Carrick on Shore. And that'll have more details on that day-long festival that's happening called Tractors and Tudors Christmas Festival. It's kicking off at 11 o'clock with Christmas craft markets in Ormond Castle. And all the details are up there on that Instagram, which is Explore Carrick on Shore. Stuart Downey, a.k.a. Stuart Lights Carrick. Thanks a million for joining me.
Thanks, Arda.
The Sunday Grill with Orla Rapple on Beat 102-103.
Across the southeast, it's Beat 102-103. Well, if you're looking for a festive movie this weekend, The Magic Reindeer, Saving Santa's Sleigh, opened on Friday, and you might just hear a Wexford accent among the characters. Aileen Mithen is an actor and singer, and she plays Wilma the Weasel in the third release of this animated series. Will we play a clip from this, Aileen, and see if you're in here anywhere? Because what is a weasel? And I was watching all the clips going, is that a weasel? I don't think I know what a weasel is.
Yes, I know. It's the first time that I've ever played a weasel. Yes, so I mean, I couldn't tell you a lot about them, but no. I know that this particular one is great crack. And
okay, let's have a listen to a clip from it and see if Wilma the Weasel can be heard.
Cool.
Where's the sleigh? It's gone!
Without the sleigh, there is no Christmas.
What?
Oh no!
The sleigh is ours.
Show me what you got.
There's no time to lose.
Huh? Are you all right?
Don't worry about us.
Us? Bring you fire.
Hoopa. Bring it on.
Totally
cool. I know. I like where this is going.
You want to move aside there, hotshot?
Pardon me, mouse.
Stop right there. I'm a living.
Wow. Oh, that made me smile the whole way through. How cute. Did you hear Wilma in there anywhere?
I did. I didn't hear the Wexford accent.
No.
Sorry about that. I'm always trying to sneak that in any little TV series and films. But, you know, it's very rare that they need it for some reason.
Can you do your Wilma accent for me there for a second till I hear it?
Well, Wilma, she's kind of from the south of America. Oh. You know, a little bit of that going on. She's
I love
a singer.
It.
Yeah, she's a singer and never really had the career that she wanted. But look, that's my backstory on her. I've just made up and
you
filled in a lot
yourself.
Of the lines.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
So this
exactly.
is your third outing on this series, The Magic Reindeer. And this one is Saving Santa's Sleigh. Give us the backstory of it. What's going on?
Well, I guess it's really, it follows a small little, young little reindeer called Nico, who we've seen in the first two of the series. And Nico wants to fulfill his lifelong dream to become one of Santa's flying forces. His dad is a flying force, one of the reindeers, basically, Santa's reindeer. And of course, there's lots and lots of challenges along the way. He's challenged by another young reindeer called Stella, who is extremely talented, so he may not become one of those flying forces. And lots of things happen In the meantime, they lose Santa's sleigh. So there's a big journey in trying to find that. And I guess ultimately then he has to make the decision or he has to kind of choose between trust and loyalty. So there's a lot of kind of bigger themes at play there as well. But it's such a magical, I mean, of course I'm going to say this, but genuinely it is such a magical Christmas movie for everybody, for adults. There's lots of little jokes in there for adults and for kids alike. And just the animation, I have to say, I was so taken back when we saw the screening a couple of weeks ago. It's just so beautiful. The details of the, you know, the hair on the reindeer and the stars and the northern lights and all of that. It really put me in the mood now, I have to say, for Christmas.
Oh, how gorgeous. You're kind of up against it, aren't you, this weekend with Wicked and everything? But when it comes to Christmassy stuff and the weather's been so rotten, what a way to sit in and get those Christmas feelings in the cinema this weekend.
Exactly. And it's just incredible to me. I'm always just amazed at how much animation is made here in Ireland, locally. I mean, this is full of local talent, so many Irish actors. And the voice directing is done by Mo Honan, who's based in Galway. The music is also absolutely gorgeous. I don't know if people would know Eimear Noonan, who was the first conductor from Galway.
And first female. Years ago.
That's right. Yeah, she was the first female conductor at the Oscars. Yeah. So she's amazing. And she has composed the music for this film. So it's something to be proud of as well, I think, in Ireland, that there's so, and the writing is done by Galway-based writer Martin Thorson. And so there's a lot of Irish talent in this, and it makes you feel very proud to get to that standard.
And you've been in it since day one, Aileen, have you? Since the first of the three?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, I go way back with Mo, the director Mo Honan. I mean, gosh, I did my work experience in Galway in a film company that she worked in like 110 years ago when I was in college. That's kind of where I met Mo and actually where my career in animation began, really, because I used to see the actors coming in and I'd be casting them and helping with all of the behind the scenes. And I mean, I was, I don't know, what was I, 20 at the time. Mm. And I was just so envious. I wanted to do this so badly. So they paid for my first ever voiceover demo. And that's kind of where it all kicked off for me, really.
And have you seen it get easier as the years go on with all the different technology and everything? You were saying off air that you can record this at home. I'm sure that wasn't the same when you started off, was it?
No, well, do you know, that kind of began as a result of COVID, so many things. Yeah. And actually, there was a lot of good things that came out of that time period. And of course, a lot of devastating things. But, you know, there's always the two sides of the coin. So that's really where people began to record more from their homes. Now, it'll never replace a studio. You know, that's not my job. I'm not an engineer by any means. But it is good to have a home studio of some kind, just even the basics, so that you can kind of, you know, do some pickups or do little bits and pieces if you need to. But we began recording on this film, actually, I was telling you, in the hot press in my parents' holiday home in Ballymoney there.
In my very own Ballymoney. Little did I know magic was happening.
In your very own. Exactly. And I'd say now there was, if you heard some of the sounds coming out of that house, I'm surprised somebody didn't call the guards, because it really, there was a lot of dodgy sounds, as you can imagine, because I voice Wilma, but a lot of the actors voice a lot of different characters in the film. That tends to be what happens. So a lot of wolves and lemmings and crazy little sounds coming out of that hot press.
And is Wilma a helper along the story? Does she have her own story arc? What happens with her?
She is. Well, Wilma's kind of, you know, she's certainly plucky. She's been described as plucky, and she's not afraid to speak her mind, but she's very warm-hearted and very good at giving advice, I would say. And I feel like she's matured over the movies. You know, she's given up on the singing career, and she's a very good, solid friend. Okay. And she helps a lot of the characters, including Nico, along the way. Yeah.
Gorgeous stuff. And it must be lovely to get the call again and again to come back to something that you know so well.
Yeah, especially this particular film, I think, because I did start with this so many years ago at the beginning of my career, really. So it's lovely to go back to it. And it's lovely to have a screening where you're meeting the other actors and the people involved in the film, because it's such an isolating job, really. It tends to be just you in a studio, in a small room with no air. So it's lovely when you get to meet the other actors and just kind of, yeah, there's a lot of crack when we get to meet up.
Oh, I'd say so. And it just looks so Christmassy. It's called The Magic Reindeer Saving Santa's Sleigh. It's a rotten day today, Aileen. I've just looked up movies at Gory. It's on at 12:20. I'm going to make it my business to try and get there. Oh, it's on at 2:20 as well. So I'll definitely be able to get there. And it is in cinemas across the southeast if people want to check it out. What age group would you say it's for, Aileen? I know it's everyone. We'll all get something from it. But, you know, sometimes kids feel that things can be kind of babyish for them.
Well, I have a 9-year-old and she absolutely loved it. But I would say, I mean, gosh, I don't know. It depends on your child, I suppose. But I would say a good bit younger than that as well would really enjoy it. So maybe from, I don't know, 5-6 up, really.
Oh, it's lovely. And the animation is just gorgeous in it as well, if you want to check out the trailer. But it is in cinemas as we speak. It's called The Magic Reindeer Saving Santa's Sleigh. And that is Aileen Mithen, who plays a weasel. Not just any weasel, Wilma the Weasel. Is that right, Aileen?
That's it, yeah. But yeah, I'm hoping I'll never be called a weasel outside of the film.
I'm going off be the to best Google compliment. What a weasel is now. Thanks, Aileen. I'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you so much, Orla. Lovely to talk to you.
The Sunday Grill with Orla Rappel on Beat 102-103.
Sunday morning, you know the score. It's Beat 102-103. Brian's over there.
Hello.
His birthday during the week.
Yes. I was 54.
Oh, Brian.
The big 5-4.
How did that go? You can't even turn that on its head and be 45.
Yeah.
Yeah. What age were you really?
28.
Oh, Brian.
I know, I'm an old man.
Get a mortgage.
Oh, it's gone. The whole thing is gone.
It's just over.
It's over, like.
Trying to get married.
Youth is dead.
And a mortgage.
Oh, I should be divorced like twice or three times by now, like, you know.
I should be living in that van.
I should basically be on the pension, yeah. Living on a van is not the vibe anymore.
He's not living in a van. He's living with his mum.
Yeah, no, I have a granny flat next door, actually, I'll have you know.
Okay. Will we talk Gladiators?
Of course.
I watched loads of clips of this and yeah. Okay, so it was a choice between Gladiators or Wicked this weekend for the Sunday Grill movie review. And to avoid Brian embarrassing himself as he roared Defying Gravity in the cinema this week for Wicked, people have been told not to sing along. We have chosen Gladiator 2. That's 2 in French. Now,
Ooh, that's very, how very foreign of you.
I watched some clips and Paul Mescal's hybrid Irish / Roman accent threw me for a while. And it looks as violent as the original Gladiator. But does this Gladiator sequel have the ticket power of number one, Brian?
Who knows?
Well, hopefully you do, because this is your job.
Next week.
Will we play a clip?
Of course.
Let's do it.
I'm not a general, but we are all soldiers. And up until now, we have fought for nothing more than another day's survival.
What will you have us do?
Well, you can return to your cells if you do not wish to fight this battle. Or you can join me and fight for a freedom far beyond these walls.
There once was a time when honor meant something in Rome. In this Rome, I no longer believe that exists. We must find it. And know this, where death is, we are not. Where we are, death is not.
By my sword.
Strength and honor.
Strength and honor. Strength and honor. Strength and honor.
There you go. That is Gladiator. He's going to do Wicked next week, he says.
Yeah.
Because he won't sing then.
I don't want to spoil anything.
Do you know any songs from Wicked?
Defying Gravity.
That's all you know.
Well, and popular, but Defying Gravity.
Popular. I want to be popular.
She's shaking in her seat in case you're wondering why she just sounded like she was bouncing. There she was bouncing.
That's why I'm not going to Wicked this weekend. I would not be able to keep my mouth shut.
Defying Gravity is always that scene from Glee where Kurt was allowed to hit the high note.
Everything goes back to Glee for you, Brian.
Yeah, it was a massive formative part of my growing up. Okay. That and In-Betweeners is essentially who I am as a person.
So when Gladiator 1 came out, you were 4.
Yeah. I went to see it in the cinema at the time. Yeah. No, do you know what? Do you want to hear something crazy? I didn't see the first Gladiator until like 2 years ago.
I think I might have been the same. About 10 years ago, I watched it. I went to a live event of it, actually, where someone was singing and an orchestra was doing the music. And I was in the Bord Gáis and I had to close my eyes so much because the violence... Even the screen was too big for me to avoid the violence. Couldn't do it.
I had a very controversial opinion. I thought it was kind of boring.
Really?
Yeah, I think it was a case of, you know, when people are like, this is the greatest film that's ever existed, and I watch it and it's a really slow movie. I was like, whatever. But I'd say if I watched it again, I might have.
It's kind of beautiful with all this imagery and stuff that goes
on.
Beauty
without personality, though?
Well,
Orla,
true. And you know, Paul Mescal has both beauty and personality.
Okay. I was going to be a dig at Paul Mescal there. He's like, hey, just like Paul Mescal. Like,
so tell us about him in this.
Paul Mescal starts off and he's like a general in this army on this random island and the Romans are coming in.
Oh, so he's not Roman?
Well.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
He's roaming around, Orla. Yeah. He's roaming around. And so it starts off with this, like the Predator Pascal's, he's the general of the army. They're trying to take over this island for the emperors in Rome. You know what they were like. They always wanted to get more places. Mm-hmm. Classic Roman Empire. And basically they lose that battle. He gets captured and then he becomes... You're gonna be blown away. You'll never
Not
guess what
gladiator.
It becomes. He becomes a gladiator, Orla. What a twist! And then you get to reveal, like, learn a small bit about his past and where he came from. And I feel like that will be the biggest like leak if I was to say what happens under the biggest plot leak. Okay. But I won't do that. Yeah.
So we have Denzel, we have Pedro, we have Paul.
Yeah.
So massive cast.
The way you say it like that doesn't sound very exotic and Roman at all. Sounds like you're just naming off who you met last night inside in the city. So Denzel Washington, Pedro Pascal, Paul Mescal, Joseph Quinn was in Stranger Things.
Okay, yeah.
He was famously killed off in that. Mm-hmm. There's like Matt Lucas is in there as well. There's some people you'd recognise as well, but not really like the names.
Now, if you didn't have to go and see this to review it for the Sunday Grill, would you have gone to see it?
I would have... For the pop culture of it all, it seems to just be everywhere lately. So and I was like, I actually really struggled to bring myself to go to see it. I was there on last Sunday night and I was sitting outside the car park and I just didn't want to go see it.
Why not?
How many times have I said to you that I can tell by the poster?
Yes.
I'm not going to enjoy something. And
what was it about the poster that you could tell?
I don't know. It just seemed too serious for me.
Really?
And you know me, like I'm never really wrong in these situations.
Is it serious?
But also I'm happy to admit when I am wrong in a situation.
Okay. And were you wrong?
I quite enjoyed myself at this.
Okay, good. It's been described as intense and gritty and gripping. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I liked the part when they were like boats in the Colosseum. Do you know? Like it was, people were saying that like they didn't like it because it wasn't as serious and as... story of the first one was way more emotional. And I was like, I thought the fights were cool and I liked the way there was monkeys in a fight at one stage and they were fighting the monkeys with chains. I feel like I would have been a great Roman civilian. All I could think of during the film was like, because every time they kept like having more and more battles lately because the whole like the emperors were going crazy, they kept having more Colosseum battles.
Okay.
And I was thinking, like, imagine just being an average Roman at the time. Uh-huh. Like, it's great. There's things on every night now. We can just go up and watch this, like, do you know?
Your reviews are always so highbrow, bro.
Yeah. I was just thinking, I just saw the boats in the water and I was like, I was so in.
This
and
they used, is for
the,
me.
They used a Kanye song in the trailer as well. So I was.
Okay.
I was
How
in
does Paul
there.
Do?
I thought Paul was great.
Really?
Everyone was saying that, like, they didn't think he did a job, but I think it was. There's been 24 years since the first one.
Mm-hmm.
People have built it up way too high. It's like when Shrek comes out, let's say next year, people mm-hmm. like this have incredible thing that they have to match it up to, and it's just never going to happen realistically.
Yeah.
Keep your expectations low, and you'll never be disappointed in life.
Okay,
that's my method.
That is your method.
Mm.
Okay, and Pedro, like I have to say,
he's solid in it.
And
Denzel Washington is just Denzel Washington.
It's been a long time since I've seen Denzel in anything, so
yeah. It's
good to see him back. And Pedro is just in everything these days, as is Paul. They seem to be really riding the crest of a fame wave right now and doing it well.
They were good in it, to be fair, as well.
Good stuff. Let's black pudding it.
I would give it like an 8 out of 10.
All right.
Yeah, I did not expect. I thought I was going to go in and I'd be here saying it's. I thought everyone else would be saying it's great, and I'd come in here saying it's awful. Everyone else seems to be saying it's not great, and I seem to be saying I actually had quite a good time.
Now, what kind of has thrown me a little bit is that it's called Gladiator 2.
Yeah.
Does it look like there's going to be a Gladiator 3? Was it left like that?
Not necessarily, good. But I think it's more so a case of Russell Crowe was a gladiator and Paul Mescal.
Is
a gladiator too.
Thank you.
As well.
Yeah, thank you very much.
So I think there's no real setup for a third. I feel like it's wrapped up the franchise of it all. But you know, capitalism, it could come in and be like, hey, this is a prequel to Russell Crowe.
And any flashbacks to Russell?
There is.
Oh,
yeah,
great.
And they at the start of the movie, they kind of do like a little thing through the first film. So it's like there's like little images and stuff. It's basically you're kind of watching it through pictures. So if you needed like a little kind of reminder of what the film was.
And then my next bugbear, how long is it?
It's lengthy. It's 2 hours and 28. But I got a big old bag of popcorn. I kind of horsed my way through that.
Okay, and I went back for more.
No, I didn't. I got a large popcorn roll. Come on. I'm not that bad. I'm lazy as well. I'd never leave a cinema during this film. But I didn't think it actually dragged on too much. I actually thought it was actually okay. Like it definitely has that kind of like, this is an epic. And you're like, all right, calm down. Small bit like, you know, but.
All right. Well, if you don't fancy singing along to cinemas and you like a bit of fighting.
Violence. If you want to see some beheadings.
Oh,
and
oh.
Like. A fella fight.
Is that all very CGI'd? Like, does it look? Oh, I just can't.
No,
do
no,
it.
They did
it's
it practically. Yeah, they killed a fella.
No, don't go there now. You know what I mean. Did it look fake?
I thought it looked great, but people repeat.
No, I just couldn't.
I had people come up to me and they're saying that they thought the whole thing looked awful, and I was like, "Well, but this part looked cool," and they're like, "Well, yeah, that part looked cool." I was like, "And this part looked cool as well," and they're like, "Well, yeah, that part looked cool as well." And I was like, "Okay, so some parts of it you didn't like is what I'm hearing," and then people just do a wider brush.
Okay.
Well, they don't have the nuances of me being like, I like the boats in the water. Do you know? It's like a certain level you have to get to.
8 black puddings out of 10. Thanks a million.
The Sunday Grill with Orla Rappel on Beat 102-103.